This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. This is a good period for reminiscing about Motown Records. Motown's founder, Berry Gordy, has a new autobiography. We'll talk with him about it next week on Fresh Air. Martha Reeves' memoir came out over the summer. We'll feature an interview with her on the second part of today's show. And there's a new Temptations box set retrospective, so we open this archive edition of Fresh Air with an interview with the group's founder, Otis Williams. He's been singing with the Temptations for about 30 years. My Girl was the first Temptations record that made it to number one on both the R&B and pop charts. The Temptations' best-known lead singers, David Ruffin and Eddie Kendricks, are both dead, as is Paul Williams, one of the original members. But Otis Williams still keeps the Temptations going, although the only other original member still with the group is Melvin Franklin. I spoke with Otis Williams in 1988, after the publication of his autobiography, Temptations. Welcome.
Thank you.
Fresh Air.
Thank you.
You point out the Temptations were subtler and more romantic than a lot of the other guys, and that there was no sweating or grunting on the stage. So I want to ask you how you think that was reflected in your songs and in your style on stage.
Well, I think that Paul Williams, who was one of the original members, he always believed in us trying to convey selling sex as well as keeping the class. And I wish I could take credit for not sweating, but him and I especially were sweaters. But we always tried to do things in a top-notch fashion.
Well, you say in your book that you always thought about image. Even when you were in high school and you were singing in the halls and singing at dances, you thought about image.
It's very important, you know, because when you're dealing with the public, it's always nice to set a very good impression. And we tried to do that with a very good image, a wholesome image and what have you. So that has always been one of our main criteria for trying to stay that kind of way, because that's so important.
Berry Gordy, the head of Motown Records, liked your singing, liked your style, and finally signed you to Motown Records. Now, you said that Gordy really had more respect for producers and writers than he did for the performers. And I'd like to know what you meant by that, some examples of that.
Well, he had respect for the artists, but, you know, like I said, being a creative person, you know, he was very into, like, songs, because that's what he was really noted for, because he was a songwriter first, because he wrote songs for Jackie Wilson and Marv Johnson, Barrett Strong. And so I guess he was kind of partial to the producers and to the songwriters to make sure that whatever was being produced at Motown, it was done with the right kind of ingredient, with the right kind of song structure, which he always stressed, and make sure that the lyrics had meaning and where people could really identify and say, oh, yeah, I know what they're talking about. I've lived that. That's touched me before.
But in terms of the lack of power that the acts themselves sometimes had, you describe how if a group didn't show up in the studio on time for their recording date, he'd have another group come in and record the song.
Well, that's true. We had that happen to us with Do You Love Me.
Mm-hmm.
But it was not because of us not coming to the studio and knew that we had to be there. It was that this one particular day we were at St. Stephen's Community Church and watching the Dixie Hummingbirds and the Harmonizing Four, because we were very into gospel groups. And so the next day when we came up to the company, and they said, man, where were you guys? Mr. Gordy, he was looking for you all over town, because he had to see a song for you guys. We said, well, we were at church. At church? And so we said, well, we were into spirituals, and we just had to watch those guys sing. He said, well, he gave the song to the Contours, and it was Do You Love Me?
I can't imagine the Temptations singing Do You Love Me. It's, you know, I know the Contours version so well.
Right.
Doesn't seem like the perfect song for the group. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess we'll never know now, because he wanted to try it out on us, and I think it would have been designed for Paul. Williams had, we had the chance to do the song, but I think the record went to number two, and we were kind of jealous, but we were happy for the Contours as well, because we felt that our time would come.
Otis Williams is my guest, the founder of the Temptations. Now, the first song that you had that really made it onto the charts, that crossed over onto the charts, was the way you do the things you do. Now, this song was the result of a competition in-house, right?
Well, Barry always, like I stated in the book, he always had that competitiveness with his writers and his producers. You know, whoever would come up with the best product would get the release, and if they did it often enough, would get the most release, which would mean that you would make a lot of money. So Smokey had been writing, you know, and being very successful.
This is Smokey Robinson, who was your producer for
right,
a
and he
long
had
time.
Produced quite a few hits on Mary Wells. And when she left, that kind of opened up a little vacuum. So I guess he said, well, after writing My Guy, let me write My Girl. And so in 64, we recorded My Girl at the end of 64. And it was a big hit came February of 65.
Now, the way you do the things you do, Smokey Robinson also wrote that.
Yes, Smokey Robinson and Bobby Rogers.
The lead singer on this is Eddie Kendricks.
Eddie Kendricks.
And let's give it a listen, then we'll talk about the vocal harmonies. Okay.
You got a smile so bright, you know you could have been a candle. I'm holding you so tight, you know you could have been a hand. You know you could have been some perfume. Well, you could have been anything that you wanted to, and I can tell the way you do the things you do,
the way you do the
all
things
day,
you do, the way you do the things you do.
As pretty as you are, you know you could.
Otis Williams, which part were you singing on that record?
I was singing baritone. We would always sit around with Smokey, and Smokey was a very good producer in the respect of he would already have in mind how he wanted the harmonies to be structured, who would sing, what lead, and what have you. So it really was never no problem working with Smokey, because he would say, okay, we knew Melvin would sing bass. Eddie was on lead. Paul, he sang second tenor. David did first, and I was baritone.
You describe how some of the producers would have the singers sing slightly above their range.
Yes, yes. Motown was noted for recording their songs like a step higher, because they wanted the tension, the vocal dynamics, the stressing point, the pleading sound. So when you would hear it, you could say, oh, wow, I feel what he's saying, like pain in the voice. They didn't want you to sing too relaxed, because the song wouldn't come across with that emotional outlet, that meaning where you could really feel it. So they would always cut the tunes, especially Norman and Holland and Doja Holland would cut it a step higher, because that's the way Ain't Too Proud to Beg was recorded. It was recorded just a key too high for David, but he was able to do it, but it was not without us having to stop the tape and let him rest, because he was straining his vocal cords and his glasses were sliding all off his face and sweat was popping off. But we were, you know, just saying, go ahead, David, you can do it, you can do it. And it turned out to be one of our biggest sellers.
Now, did you have to be above your range also?
No, I didn't do that much leading in the songs that I did sing lead on. It was in the key, because I'm more or less a ballad person rather than the driving kind.
Okay. We got to talk about your choreography.
Okay.
The choreography for your group was done by Charlie Atkins, who was a great dancer and got his start like years before he started working with vocal groups.
Mm-hmm.
Dancing with Honey Coles. And
absolutely.
So describe some of the steps that he choreographed for the Temptations and the names for the steps, too.
Well, actually, Charlie, like you said, from the Charlie Atkins, Cole and Atkins vaudeville days. So we had checked him out a long time ago when he used to do Frankie Lyman, and he really did a wonderful job on the Cadillacs because he brought the house down with the Cadillacs at the Fox Theater. And Charlie Stepps, let me tell you something, not easy.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I mean, he's got a lot of little hitch steps and, you know, a lot of little subtle movements. And you really have to pay a lot of attention, you know, because you look at the stuff that we do on stage and say, oh, that's easy. Oh, no, no, no. I mean, he's cussed us out and called us all kind of names, you know, because it would be hard to get, you know. But once you got a Charlie Atkins choreography down, you would definitely be separate and apart from any of the other acts because his stuff is so unique that, you know, you just knew you had captured something very special because he's not an easy fella to deal with as far as his choreography.
You said there were no extra beats for corrections when he was choreographing one of your songs. Explain what you mean by that.
Well, you know, you had to learn it right then and there because, let's say, if you got out of step, you would catch hell getting back in because it's a lot of little hit steps, and he's got everything scientifically in place. So if you missed that and had to come back in, you said, oh, my God, how am I going to catch back in? Because, you know, a lot of times choreography is to a certain kind of beat. Charlie would hear something that you would have to really strain to hear on the record, and he would probably pick up something like if it was a guitar lick. Well, most cases, steps are choreographed to the drum or bass lick. But he would get something that's all together, that's faint, that you would say, man, I don't even hear that. But it would be there. So if you didn't really grab hold of that and lost that step, it would take a minute to get back in. So it was very tedious in learning Charlie's routines. But like I said again, once you learn it, people would stand up and applaud because it was something really unique.
Did you ever lose it on stage?
Oh, yeah. All of us at one time or another.
How would you cover up?
Oh, we'd cover up. But somewhere along the way, after a while, you say, oh, no, I got to get back in. So you would find a way to get back in. It was just something inside you said, you better find a way. So you would find a way, but it would be hard. You would miss a few bars before you got back in step. So we would cover it up. We would clown a little bit. Oh, I'm right back to the bandstand to do that, and then come back up and, oh, okay, I got it. Boop, and fall right in. But you would catch hell getting in for a while.
Otis Williams is my guest, and we're talking about founding and singing with the Temptations. And before we talk more about it, let's listen to another of the Temptations recordings. This is Since I Lost My Baby. You want to say anything about this before we
This is one of my all-time favorites because the intro reminds me of a movie theme because it's so big, you know, and I really love the intro as well as the song.
And tell us what to listen to for your voice on here.
I am singing second tenor on this here. I'm singing right under Eddie. One of the things about the Temps, we are noted for being able to sing many different parts. Sometimes I sing baritone, second tenor, first tenor, aside from lead and lead. Never bass. That's exclusive to Melvin.
Okay, here we go. Since I Lost My Baby.
Plenty of light.
Oh, yeah.
The day is dawning, sunny and bright.
Oh, yeah.
But after I've been crying all night, the sun is cold and the new day seems old. Since I lost my baby.
Since I lost my baby.
Singing and the children are playing. There's plenty of work and the bosses are paying. Not a sad word should a young heart be saying. But
fun is a bore
and with money
I'm poor.
Since I lost my baby.
Since I lost my baby.
I said Temptations. My guest is Otis Williams, the founder and leader of the group. That's one of your many records that crossed over R&B charts and pop charts. Barry Gordy really wanted the group to cross over. He was really into crossing over.
Yes, yes.
So were there things that he thought you should do to make sure you crossed over to the pop charts?
Well, he always stressed the thing of, like I said, lyrics, you know, had a large play in it and song structure. But he also stressed that the melody would be very simple, you know, whereas, you know, even a child could hum it. So he would stress as simple as you could keep it, the more mass appeal it would have.
Well, there's certain things you're supposed to do, like for the white listeners.
Keep it simple.
Keep it simple for the white people.
And for the black, but especially for, you know, that mass appeal. You know, just keep it like we said in the recording. I said it earlier today, and Joey and Suzanne, they died laughing. But when we are in the studio, sometimes you can get so sophisticated and carrying on with putting certain things together. So when we get to that point, we say, no, just K-I-S-S. And that means, in our term, keep it simple, stupid. Because most cases, when you look at the top 10, records basically are very simplistic, you know, and they have that mass appeal.
Well, I got the impression that the idea was that record buyers should be able to sing along with the song, so you didn't want to do anything too complicated that we wouldn't be able to keep up with.
That was Barry's philosophy. That's it. You hit it dead on the head.
Otis Williams, founder of The Temptations, recorded in 1988 after the publication of his autobiography, Temptations. There's a new Temptations CD box set called Emperors of Soul. This is Fresh Air.